Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast.
And Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Put your fours up because it's the fourth quarter of our show today. We've been taking your calls all show long on which team had the most impressive win during Wild Card Weekend. We're going to jump back to that in a little bit, but right now, we got to get to making moves. Making Moves is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs. Build your winning team today. Go to linkedin.com/sports. And Gojo, the teams that are making moves right now are the winners of the Wild Card Weekend, but we also had some teams that took some tough L's. So I got to throw the question out to you. Which win was the most impressive for you during Super Wild Card Weekend?
Man, it's hard not to still feel the shockwaves from what Buffalo did, right? Like, I know the New England Patriots are probably a team that overachieved by certain measures this year. We expected and started to expect a little bit too much as a society out of Mac Jones in some critical situations, out of the lack of playmakers on that team on the outside. All of this led us to thinking, all right, the rubber match between these teams, Bill Belichick, one of the greatest coaches in NFL history, is going to be able to make this a rock fight. And instead, what we got was the Josh Allen super weapon starting to continue to round into form. Like, when you look at Josh Allen, I was stunned by this. ESPN Stats and Imbo put this out. When you include the playoffs, Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes have nearly the exact same number of TD passes over the last two seasons. The thing that makes them both special is they rank first and second in the NFL in touchdown passes outside the pocket over the last two seasons. Chris, the minute you think you've got these guys beat, the minute you think schematically you've contained the Bills' offense, Josh Allen is starting to prove himself to be one of those guys that can go and absolutely break the wheel. And his problem's been consistency, but if he can get a handle on that, Chris, he has the arm caliber of guys we've seen like Patrick Mahomes and Aaron Rodgers. But as a runner, as a physical talent, he is Cam Newton reincarnate. He's Cam Newton with a better arm, and I never thought I'd get to say that about a quarterback. But we have seen now a 6'5", almost 6'6", 240-pound battering ram that also throws absolute gas, and it is terrifying when he cranks that thing all the way up.
No doubt, and he's beat Bill Belichick four of the last five games. So now you're starting to look at the defensive coordinator for the Patriots and Bill Belichick and say, maybe this Josh Allen guy just happens to have your number. But you're talking about a defensive scheme from the Patriots that features a lot of man coverage. And we know, Gojo, when you play a lot of man, that means defenders running with their backs turned. And when you have a quarterback that has the escapability that Josh Allen does and can move around the pocket, can get outside the defense and buy that extra time, that's going to present some challenges for the defense in terms of being able to adjust to the arm angle that the ball is coming in from, but then to also rally to the quarterback if he decides to take off as a runner. And I think that's what the Patriots defense has been dealing with when you see Josh Allen at his best. The last two games, Josh Allen over 300 yards passing, over 50 yards rushing, and I think that's what opened the door for them to have the kind of success we saw on Saturday night. But moving forward, that's going to be a problem for any defense playing the Buffalo Bills. Josh Allen is their best running back they have. He's obviously a do-everything quarterback. He's got an arm that can throw a football through a brick wall, and he's got some skill position players that can make it happen when he gets them the ball. So this is going to be a tough out. I was surprised that the Buffalo Bills defense was up to the challenge in terms of matching the physicality of that Patriots offense. Now, the Patriots offensive line was down Isaiah Wynn, so that may have had a negative impact as well. But that was the part that surprised me about that game, because I just didn't think that they were going to be able to hold up in terms of the overall physicality that Patriots run game was going to come into that matchup with on Saturday. And they did. So credit to the Buffalo Bills. But my big surprise, Gojo, has to be the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, man. And I know it doesn't seem like it should be, because you're talking about Tom Brady, a guy that's been to 10 Super Bowls and won 7 of them, including last year with the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But the fact that everybody was questioning what they would do offensively, not having Chris Godwin, not having Leonard Fournette, not having Antonio Brown, not having Ronald Jones, like, I think he answered all of those questions. Like, you don't have to worry about this. It's Tom freaking Brady. They scored on three of their first four possessions. It was 17-0 before you could blink. They had a couple of early scores in the second half, bookended that interception by Shaq Barrett with touchdowns. It was a situation where it was a rout. It was 31-0 at 5 minutes to left in the third quarter, and that team just pretty much put it in cruise control. the game wasn't nearly as close as the final score. And that defense looked every bit as dominant as we saw them last year in the postseason, especially against the number one rushing offense in the NFL. So if you're telling me that's the kind of defense that's going to come to the party for the rest of the playoffs for the Bucs, then I would tell you that's a team that's absolutely capable of repeating as Super Bowl champs.
Yeah, Chris, and probably victims of that success that you mentioned off the top here, because my initial action outside of the Bills, I thought they were the runaway most impressive team from this weekend. My reaction was also the 49ers, just because it was the full Kyle Shanahan toolbox on display for a team that had been a little bit inconsistent through the course of the season. They just completely out-physicaled the Cowboys. But I think you're right. And Tampa now, they're going to have some stuff to contend with going forward. Injuries along that offensive line to go along with what we saw for them on defense. Tristan Wirfs, their all-pro right tackle, was in a boot coming off this game. So all stuff to keep an eye on here. We want to hear from you on this too. 888-SAY-ESPN, 888-729-3776. And as we expected, there is a lot of people very questioning about the Dallas Cowboys and what we saw here. Let's go to Floyd in North Carolina. Lloyd, you're on Canty and Golic Jr. What's up?
What's up, fellas? How y'all doing?
Good. How you doing?
I'm a proud but suffering Cowboy fan. We've been going through this for a long time. So I need to ask Chris Canty, what is it that happens to the Cowboys when they get to the playoffs? Y'all were 13-3. Y'all had a hell of a lineup, but y'all didn't get it done. What happens when you get in the playoffs? It's been happening for so long.
But, Lord, I'm still blaming Jessica Simpson and that trip that Tony Romo went on Cowboys.
Wow.
Why we didn't win that game. Yeah, I'm throwing Tony under the bus. Damn it, I'm going to do it.
Yes.
We had Gojo, I told you.
Yes.
We had double-digit Pro Bowlers that year. It was like 14, 15 guys that made the Pro Bowl. And the New York Giants were our divisional round opponent, and we smoked them twice in the regular season. There was no reason for us to lose that game. None. But the Patrick Creighton drop pass, the interception to R.W. McQuarters, and then leading up to that game, the bye week with Tony Romo going to Cabo. Like, those are the things that I can't get past, and that was probably the most talented team that I had ever played on. So I wish I had an answer for Lloyd as to why the Cowboys keep coming up short. But I don't. But in this situation against the 49ers, it was clear to me. Coaching was all the difference in this game. And Dan Orlovsky, who we had on in the 5 o'clock hour, did a masterful job of being able to break that down. 8 of the 14 penalties either gave the 49ers a first down or took away a first down for the Cowboys. That's inexcusable. That kind of swing is unacceptable. Then the penalty that you took where you marched your punt team on the field and then tried to switch off with your offense and got to delay a game. Like, those are the types of things that just can't happen, but we routinely see them with Mike McCarthy, and at some point, something about that has to change. And Gojo, I think that McCarthy's at the stage in his career who he is as a coach. I don't see much changing in that regard, so I'm not sure where the Dallas Cowboys go from here in terms of who's going to be that coach to get them to the next level.
Man, playoff runs outdone by trips to Cabo. We've seen boat trips for the New York Giants company that, like, we need to be on the lookout for if we find out in retrospect that some Cowboy went on a vacation before this, so we've got the built-in excuse. Because I'm with you, Chris, I was stunned. You brought up what I think was the key in all of this, because I watched that game and I was stunned. Now, part of this is what we saw. Deebo Samuel is one of the most electric playmakers in the NFL.
No doubt.
So maybe judging them by the standards unfair, Cowboys look slow in comparison. Like, especially on offense, that did not look like a dynamic unit. But the more I think about it, they led the league in that game in 2nd and 15, 2nd and 20+, because of the dumb penalties over the course of this game, the pre-snap penalties. Show me the offense that's going to look good in those situations. So maybe it was just that. Maybe it really is the fact that some of those playmakers have aged. But, Chris, I was amazed at how thoroughly outclassed, not only along the lines of scrimmage, but when it came to competitive speed, the Cowboys looked in this game.
No, you're right about that, Gojo. And here's the thing. I guess we shouldn't be surprised that the Cowboys' offense struggled just a little bit, because they told us that they didn't feel good about their offense in Week 18. The
yeah.
Eagles had second and third string players out there, and they had their first string guys in until the fourth quarter of that game, in a game that really didn't have any playoff implications for them because they were already in the tournament. So the fact that they left their guys in that game and they played out the string in Week 18 to try to get into some kind of rhythm – should have told us that they don't feel good about where they're at offensively. And then when you couple that with the fact that they're going up against a really stout run defense in the 49ers front seven, I mean, we got the results that we got. Like, I just, It was surprising in real time, but in hindsight, it really shouldn't have been, and that's why so many people were on the 49ers bandwagon going into Super Wild Card Weekend.
It's so true. The ultimate expectation, which is every year in Dallas, but especially in this season with Dak back as the $40 million man and healthy, all to be let down on Super Wild Card Weekend. And it leads back to the question you mentioned. We've asked Dan Orlovsky and others here, what does the future look like for Mike McCarthy, and what does it have to look like for the Cowboys to get over the hump? We'll get to that next here. Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus.
This is ESPN Radio.
Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. Get at us on the Twitter, at Mike Golic Jr., at Chris Canty 99. Jumpstart the new year with Body Armor Light, the low-calorie sports drink hydrating your active lifestyle. Shop now at retailers nationwide. And Gojo, we had Dan Orlovsky on earlier in the show, and he didn't mince words when we talked about Mike McCarthy as a head coach. He said that he didn't necessarily see a path to a championship for the Cowboys with Mike McCarthy at the helm in the short term. And I can't say that I disagree with him all that much in all of this. I know that the head coach is an easy target, especially after the team falls short of the owner's expectations. Jerry Jones coming out last week saying that it was championship or bust, and then being ousted at home in the wild card round to the sixth seed in the NFC playoff field. I don't know if Mike McCarthy is the one to get it done. And then you factor in the coaches that are on the staff, Kellen Moore and Dan Quinn, both interviewing during this hiring cycle. And one has to ask the question, do the Cowboys need to act fast when it comes to Mike McCarthy and potentially replacing him with somebody that they think could be better in this window that they have over the course of the next couple of years?
And I think that window is important to consider because you brought it up earlier, and I think it's accurate. There's probably 2 years left with this current Cowboys core in a spot where they believe they're in a mode to win a Super Bowl. And all this becomes even more relevant because Stephen Jones, the executive VP for the Cowboys, joined 105.3 The Fan yesterday and talked about Mike McCarthy and their comfort level with the coach heading into next season.
Now, obviously, part of that future, and I don't know what you can say, what you want to say, but are you of the belief or are you confident that Mike McCarthy will continue to lead this team next season?
Absolutely. Very confident.
Yeah, Chris, this is no disrespect to Stephen Jones, who's done a lot of great things for that organization, but if your name doesn't start with J and you're speaking about the Cowboys, I tend to not really believe all that much of what's going on, or at the very least, hold out until I hear from Jerry himself, who, as you've pointed out during the course of this show, canceled his schedule, media availability, and hits that are usually on radio during this week, which indicates to me that guy's doing some thinking right now, and that's probably not good for Mike McCarthy. The problem is, Chris, I just look around and go, what are you going to do that's better right this second in a world where you're going to probably see change at those coordinator spots, where you're going to have to make some decisions on that roster about some players with bloated contract numbers, Amari Cooper, Michael Gallup coming up as a free agent and otherwise. What's the value of consistency at somewhere along this spot? And I think that spot may end up being Mike McCarthy, purely because when you're looking resume to resume, there might not be something as easy or comfortable for Jerry Jones to find out there, who was the one, by the way, who brought Mike McCarthy in to begin with.
Yeah, and the Dallas Cowboys head coaching job is not one of those jobs that's very easy to navigate, because you do have to deal with an owner that's ever-present in Jerry Jones, somebody that's going to insert themselves when it comes to football decisions. But at the same time, Gojo, it doesn't make sense to run it back if you know that once you get into the postseason, you're going to be matched up against coaches that you would probably have to side with the opposing team having the advantage. You look at the NFC, you look at Matt LaFleur, you look at Kyle Shanahan, you look at Bruce Arians. All of those coaches have had their team competing at a championship level in recent memory, and the Dallas Cowboys just haven't been there. And it's been a long time since we talked about that with Mike McCarthy and his time in Green Bay. So I wonder whether or not the Dallas Cowboys pivot just from the fact that your head coach is not being a part of the solution or not being a part of, you know, this team trying to move it forward when it comes to getting to the championship rounds of the playoffs. There are too many in-game errors when it comes to game management, clock management, usage of timeouts, all of those things that fall at the feet of the coach, not to mention the execution issues that we've seen from this Cowboys team. Jerry Jones let it be known last week when he addressed the media and then after the game on Sunday that it's not a talent issue with this team. He said when you collect this kind of talent, You got to take advantage of it. Now, it's either a lack of execution or a lack of game planning with the X's and O's. Either way, the buck stops with Mike McCarthy. So, to me, that's an indictment on your head coach. And quite frankly, I don't know where the value add for Mike McCarthy is when you consider the different roles that the other coaches on this staff play for this team. I just don't see it, and that's why I think it's not a situation of, you know, what your options are, being as loyal as your options. I think this is a situation where you got to find somebody that represents an option or represents an upgrade, because staying with Mike McCarthy, the status quo, just isn't good enough.
Now, Kenny Angola Jr. here on ESPN Radio. We talked to Nui Scruggs, the sports director for NBC5 Dallas-Fort Worth, earlier in the show. If you missed that, you can go check out the podcast, because he said he saw Jerry Jones stunned in the tunnel after that game. And we asked him about what he thought, and he brought up and said, unless Jerry Jones can go out and get his white whale, Sean Payton, if that somehow comes loose from the New Orleans Saints, he doesn't see a lot of movement or change here. And I think part of that's because, Chris, you mentioned the talent amassed. It all looks good on paper. It all looks good with the price tag. But when we look, Amari Cooper in this game, inconsistent at best. Michael Gallup was off the field, and all of a sudden it made it so much harder for CeeDee Lamb and the rest of that group to get open and be effective in this game. The offensive line that for years has been touted as the strength in Dallas. I mean, forget just talking about Tyler Biadasz, their center, and Connor Williams, their left guard, who I have to imagine there's going to be some upgrades likely made at those positions, potentially based on the performances that we saw. But I mean, in this game, I saw Zach Martin and Tyron Smith get beat on the same play. Like, that's like finding a unicorn in the wild riding a shooting star into an exploding sun. But all that's to say, that became a little more common down the stretch of the season than I had seen for Tyron Smith. And so you're going to have to look at that as a strength. I just think, Chris, a lot of those parts, and we haven't even got to the Zeke Elliott contract, lot of the parts that you paid expecting a certain level of performance did not in critical situations give you that. And I think that's one of the things, as much as coaching, that needs evaluating this offseason, Chris, is what are you going to do with some of those high price tags on offense and defense?
Well, I'll say this. They are committed to the person that's buying the groceries, that being senior executive Will McClay. Like, he oversees the personnel for the Cowboys. You know, Jerry Jones wears the GM hat, but he's the de facto GM because he's the one that's doing all the scouting and bringing in all the talent. They just gave him a contract extension, so they don't think he's a part of the problem. I think what this is going to come down to is trying to find a coach that can put these guys in better positions more consistently to do what they do best. And it was clear in the second half of this season and then in the wild card game that wasn't happening. Now, whether you want to blame Kellen Moore or you want to blame Mike McCarthy, I think you can take your pick. But the offense didn't step up and perform the way that we're accustomed to seeing them, and that's too much been the theme for this team at the closing stretch of this season, month of December on into the playoffs. So I think it still comes back to a coaching issue, and they've got to determine in short order what they want to do at that spot, because although Stephen Jones seems adamant that Mike McCarthy is coming back, until you hear it from Jerry Jones, it's hard for me to buy into it.
Exactly. So we're all going to wait around for that. But the Cowboys aren't the only team that are now getting ready for the offseason. It was 1-2-3 Cancun for a number of other NFL squads. So coming up next, we'll try and assess the damage and figure out what do these teams need to do to try and better their stock going forward this offseason. We'll get to that after Chris Canty tells you about Man in the Arena.
Join host Gautam Chopra as he explores Tom Brady and what he's meant to football and the world in Man in the Arena, a new podcast from ESPN Plus and Religion and Sports. A companion piece to Gotham's ESPN Plus docuseries, this 10-part podcast examines the improbable ripple effects of Brady's career. Things that have forced us to rethink everything we thought we knew about time, hatred, perfection, even fate. The podcast is brought to you by State Farm, Zip Recruiter, and Rocket Mortgage. Listen and follow Man in the Arena now on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, and stream the docuseries on ESPN+. More Canty and Golic Jr. back after this.
This is ESPN Radio.
Back by demand, it's Canty and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN+. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Canty, we're presented by Progressive Insurance. And, Mike, we're trying to make sense of what we saw on Super Wild Card Weekend, and we're asking people to chime in on the call-in line. Also, hit us up on the Twitter, at Mike Golic Jr. and at Chris Canty 99. And we got to get into what the losses mean for the teams that took the L, caught the fade on Super Wild Card Weekend, and that brings us to what's happening next. What's happening next is brought to you by Body Armor Light Sports Drink. And Gojo, we gotta talk about what's next. This is inspired by Bill Barnwell's.com article where he tries to outline what the teams that lost on Super Wild Card Weekend should be looking forward to in the 2022 offseason. And there is a laundry list of things that these teams that lost this weekend have to address.
Yeah, there are. So we're going to go around and look at a few of these teams going through the next step, because coming into this now, we have the Arizona Cardinals, the Dallas Cowboys, the Vegas Raiders, the Eagles, the Steelers, and the Patriots all getting ready to waltz into this offseason. And Chris, why don't we start with Philadelphia? We spent so much time talking about the future for Jalen Hurts at the quarterback spot on that team. Now, Bill Barnwell in this article outlines that he thinks defense is a place they need to go. I would also say this, Chris. I think you've got to find a competent number two receiver to go opposite DeVonta Smith. It's obvious that you've hit on him, but your recent draft misses, guys like Jalen Reagor, who was abysmal not only on offense but on special teams for you, J.J. Arcega-Whiteside before him, outside of Dallas Goedert, you just haven't had another weapon to complement in that Philadelphia passing offense. They had to lean in because of their quarterback skill set as a rushing team, but if you want to continue to grow that side of the ball for Nick Sirianni, you're going to have to find a competent guy to go opposite DeVonta Smith, who I think is going to be your true number one.
Yeah, they took swings and misses on some receivers, and you just outlined what happened, and Jalen Reagor was abysmal in that game against the Bucs. But you're right, they've got to continue to put weapons around Jalen Hurts to see if he's going to be the long-term answer at quarterback. So far, so good in his first full season as the starter. But the defensive side of the ball also has to be addressed, especially the back end. You got some guys that are unrestricted free agents going into the offseason. Both your starting safeties, Alex Singleton, as well as and Steve Nelson. So, I mean, you've got some pieces that have to be, you know, re-signed, or you've got to try to find a way to be able to upgrade at those spots if you let them guys walk into free agency. So that side of the ball has to continue to be addressed. But I think the biggest decision is figuring out whether or not you got a quarterback, and I think you got that answer. So now surround him with the supporting cast.
So Philadelphia certainly has their work cut out for them, and that's before we get to what you decide to do. But it can't all be about the quarterback there. Chris, let's go to the Arizona Cardinals. Next, Cliff Kingsbury's outfit has sputtered down the stretch in these last few seasons here. Kyler Murray was abysmal in this game Monday night. What do you think the Cardinals need to attack this offseason?
Well, they need more playmakers, man, because this offense changed dramatically when DeAndre Hopkins was out of the lineup due to injury. And A.J. Green, he's been a good find. I thought he did exactly what they expected him to do, come in and be a solid number two. But when D-Hop went out, he wasn't capable of being number one. So they've got to figure out some more weapons for Kyler Murray to work with, but I think they're on the right track as far as what they're doing defensively.
Yep, I would say defensively, maybe just continuing to get a little bit more stout up front. We saw the way they struggled. We talked to Dan Orlovsky about the run fits. I have no problems with Vance Joseph when they get into third and medium and long that he's going to be able to dial up some stuff with a lot of those tweener athletes. But on offense, I think it's continuing to beef up the line of scrimmage. They got a huge boost when they brought over their center this offseason from Las Vegas. But outside of that, outside of Rodney Hudson really being a difference maker, and we saw the numbers when he was on and off the field for Kyler Murray in that offense, I think you saw last night, they got harassed going up the field. We know the Rams on D-line is one of the best in football, but if you're going to get out of that division, you've got to start to build yourself better up front. We've seen some spread offenses like Joe Burrow's be able to get by without it, but I think at some point, you have got to win the division you're in first and foremost, and that's got to start up front for the Arizona Cardinals. Canty and Golic Jr. here on ESPN Radio. Let's keep it moving and take a look right now. We've talked about the Cardinals. We've talked about the Eagles. Let's look at the Pittsburgh Steelers, Chris. Where do they even begin this offseason?
Well, it starts with the quarterback and the offensive line, right? They retooled their offensive line completely this past offseason, and they didn't necessarily net the results that they were looking for. And we know that they've got to find what they're going to do next at the quarterback spot. So those would be the two most important things that they address. We know they have a generational talent at running back. They've got some pretty good receivers out there on the edges. We like what Pat Freiermuth is, and you got a championship caliber defense. So, I mean, the offensive line and the quarterback are the things that they absolutely have to address, and it feels like they're in a good place to be able to do that given the offseason and their cap situation.
Yeah, Bill Barnwell says as much in the article, because you look around at the rest of it. You've seen plenty of guys like Minka Fitzpatrick show up. You're going to get Stephon Tuitt back up front from injury this year. Cam Hayward was an all-pro. TJ Watt's a defensive player of the year. And that receiving core, when it gets fully healthy, I think has a chance to be that usual Pittsburgh brand of special. It is really, can they find a quick solution to their problem at quarterback? Because draft-wise, because Minka Fitzpatrick's there, they punted on that chance to invest long-term early, and now you're staring down an offseason that's so uncertain at that position here. The New England Patriots, Chris, are in the entirely different spot. They got to get time for Mac Jones to develop. We saw a lot of that look good this year. Their offensive line's ready. That defense at times this season was great. Chris, this one is just as simple as you got to start to spend in free agency at wide receiver because you cannot draft that position. You've never demonstrated any ability. I can't sit here and laud N'Keal Harry, their former first-round pick, for being a good crackback block on tosses. As much as I want to reward wide receivers blocking on tosses and runs, that can't be what we laud you for when you're drafted in the first round. If the Patriots cannot win there the way they've demonstrated, they've got to go and be able to find somebody in free agency that can mimic the production they used to get.
No doubt about it. And I'll go on the defensive side of the ball. They've got to find another pressure player opposite of Matt Judon. As much as we love Kyle Van Noy, I mean, he's the next closest sack guy. He only had 5 on the season. So you've got to find somebody else that can be a threat to be a double-digit sack guy in a 17-game regular season. And I think that has to absolutely be a priority just to give Matt Judon more opportunities for one-on-one pass rush. Give him a chance to have more of an impact on the game. So I would look at more pressure players up front on the defensive side of the ball.
I think we're going to get some help there internally. Christian Barmore really started to develop. And remember, he was a guy, one-year wonder at Alabama, got a late bloomer the way a lot of those D-tackles, Quinnen Williams before him came. And we saw towards the end of that season, he became dynamic on the interior as a rusher there. That can certainly help a lot right in their own backyard here. Chris, we've already talked so much about the Dallas Cowboys, so let's finish off with the Las Vegas Raiders here, because I think the first place that they start in all this, the more I think about it, you bring Derek Carr back. You have so many other variables in all this. You can start by evaluating that position correctly and getting whatever new version of the staff that comes in, because I think Rich Bisaccia is ultimately going to get shown the door. You're going to have a new GM and a new head coach. Let them start with who Dan Orlovsky described as one of the 10 or 12 best quarterbacks in the league and go from there.
Yeah, and I think you also need to invest in the offensive line that's protecting Derek Carr, right? I know that they've got a lot of holes on the defensive side of the ball, and they got a lot of veteran defensive players on the cheap, short-term deals for very little money, and they've got to figure out ways to navigate those deals as well. But I think you try to continue to invest in Derek Carr and see how far he can take you with this team as constituted. You got to find a way to upgrade the offensive line, because you mentioned Rodney Hudson, who came over from the Raiders, ended up going to the Arizona Cardinals. They haven't found a way to replace him. They haven't found a way to replace Gabe Davis. So it's just one of those situations. They've got to try to refortify that offensive line in order for that unit to remain a strength of this team.
It's so true. And they're like the Dolphins, where they've tried to invest young. They drafted Alex Leatherwood in the first round. You know, they've got Colton Miller on that left side here. Jerome Simpson from Clemson that started there for them. And it just hasn't quite worked how they've wanted it to yet there. That is how these teams hope to jumpstart the new year. That's what's happening now with Body Armor Light. Jumpstart your new year with Body Armor Light, the low-calorie sports drink hydrating your active lifestyle. Shop now at retailers nationwide. Coming up next, why one coach continues to remind me that he has everything his team needs to go back and capture another Super Bowl. The one man who attacks this season like a buffet line. Next on ESPN Radio.
This is ESPN Radio.
Kenny and Golic Jr. on ESPN Radio and ESPN Plus. Mike Golic Jr. and Chris Kenny. We're presented by Progressive Insurance. If you missed any of today's show, go to the Kenny and Golic Jr. podcast. Download, rate, and subscribe. We greatly appreciate it. Got to give a shout out to the guests that came on today's show. Nui Scruggs, NBC5 Dallas-Fort Worth sports director, giving us the fallout from the Dallas Cowboys loss to the San Francisco 49ers. Stanford women's basketball forward Fran Belibi. Appreciate the Denny's breakfast. She was on the show to talk about her NIL deal with Denny's and then the season that they have with Stanford trying to repeat as champs. And then, of course, ESPN NFL analyst Dan Orlovsky breaking down Super Wild Card Weekend. And Gojo, we had some great stuff come out of that. But now it's time for us to get to the portion of our show that we like to call Three and Out.
Sometimes it's the worst. Sometimes it's the best. Either way, we'll get you straight with everything you need to know. This is Three and Out.
Whew, and there is no better way to start Three and Out on a day where I ate a dry pancake on air than with Andy Reid, the Kansas City Chiefs head coach, who got a monster win on Wild Card Weekend over the Pittsburgh Steelers, was asked about his hunger for more after winning a Super Bowl 2 years ago, getting back last year. How you stay in this mode? And let's just say the comparison that he brought up is the most Andy Reid thing humanly possible.
If you like chocolate cake and you eat a piece and then you have one dangled in front of your face, you're probably going to want to eat that too. Not much is going to stop you. So, I mean, that's how you feel about the Super Bowl. I mean, that is the chocolate cake with the ultimate frosting. You're going to try to go get it if you can. You know, that's the best you can.
The Super Bowl is a chocolate cake with the ultimate frosting. Chris, as someone who has tasted that chocolate cake, is he accurate?
No doubt. And let me say this, Gojo. I would want to be the last person to stand between Andy Reid and a piece of chocolate cake. I've sat across from Coach Reid before. The man loves his food. And I will tell you this. I don't want to be in between him and a piece of chocolate cake. I feel like you'll pull back a nub if you get into it with him, trying to keep him from some chocolate cake.
Hell no.
Just saying. That's not a good place to be.
It's not where anyone wants to be. I've heard that man talk about the regular season like a brisket. He's made copious amounts of meat comparisons, but he saves dessert for the postseason because he's an enlightened man. For anyone out there that would dare slander chocolate cake, let it be known we rock with chocolate cake around here, and we damn sure know Andy Reid does too.
That let it be known, Gojo. After he won the Super Bowl, the man talked about going to get some cheeseburgers. Like that. I mean, this is the thing with Andy Reid. Postseason wins means he's letting his diet all go. He's letting it all hang out. And I can't blame it.
Big Red is just flat out built different. Speaking of built different, that is what professional hockey continuously gives us. And Oilers forward Leon Draisaitl got into it a little bit with the media as tensions continue to boil over in Edmonton. This is the most purely hockey player and media exchange I've ever heard.
Lots of reasons for why the Oilers are playing the way they are in terms of winning and losing. What do you think is the number one reason for the losses now? Is there one thing that you, in your own mind, you're saying we got to get better at that?
Yeah, we have to get better at everything.
Would you like to expand on that?
No. Nope. You can do that. You know everything.
Why are you so pissy, Leon? Why are you so pissy?
I'm not. I'm just answering your
question. Yeah, you are. Whenever I ask you a question,
I gave you an answer.
Not very good one. Okay. I have one more for you. Leon, you show your frustration on the ice last game against Ottawa. Is that a good thing when you show it so the other team knows you're frustrated?
Yeah, it's a great thing, for sure.
Good.
Yeah. Chris, I don't know of any other sport with reporters brash enough to go at the players the way that that man just did.
No, man, you're talking about a guy that won the Hart Trophy 2 years ago. For those that don't know, that's the MVP award in hockey. Like, it's unbelievable that a reporter would go at his neck the way that that reporter did for Draisaitl. But, I mean, it's just one of those things, man. It's a different culture in hockey. They're built different. You said that before. That's just what it is. But that's why we love the sport.
Exactly, and we know those guys, if they need to go outside of the media room and drop the gloves for a little bit, are going to be sharing some Molsons later, maybe a little bit of Timmy O's the next day on the way into the office, because that's just how respect is earned when you're talking about the NHL. What a perfect way to go out here on this show. You can catch more Canty and Golic Jr. tomorrow. Stick around. Spain and Fitz got you covered next on ESPN Radio.
Thanks for listening to Canty and Golic Jr., the podcast. You can check the guys out live weekday afternoons at 4 Eastern on ESPN Radio and on ESPN+.